So let me take this opportunity also to thank Eberhard and Grisha for organizing this very nice program. This is very interesting. What I want to tell you about today is some recent results we obtained in collaboration with Andrea Banzino and Lara Bozzella in Genova, Stefano Musacchio in Nice. Result on really tailored turbulence, in particular what are the effects, if there is any effect on the polymer addition in this very simple setup of thermal convection. And so this is the outline of my talk, which will be probably rather short. So the first part I want to introduce very briefly the viscoelastic model, and also to try to explain you why I am convinced that numerical simulation can be useful. Not only, my idea is that numerical simulation are not only useful to reproduce experimental data, but also to investigate some part of the parameter space or some setup which you cannot obtain in experiments. I mean, so it can be complementary to experiments somehow, and I will show you an example here. Then I will introduce very briefly what is ready Taylor turbulence, and then the result of viscoelastic ready Taylor turbulence. I have this graph that it works. Okay, so we all know what is what are the effects of the polymers in the flowing fluids, in the turbulent fluids. The most important effect is the drag reduction, which means that the drag coefficient, which is defined as the ratio between the work done by the force in order to keep in motion the fluid, like for example in a pipe, it would be the pressure drop along the pipe, divided by kinetic energy of the mean flow. This is the friction coefficient. And that coefficient can be reduced by introducing a polymer in the turbulence up to 5 times the original.
Aliyevsky is Alaska or is something else?
This is Alaska,
this
yes.
Is Alaska in what
a pipeline, because they pump some polymer, some oil-soluble polymer in this pipeline, and in this way
but
they're able...
Alaska, not Alaska. In what language is written?
Alaska pipeline, I don't know. I don't know why they write it Alaska. I don't know the original language. And so they were able to reduce the number of pump stations along the pipeline using some polymer in the oil. So I already lost my things. So turbulence reduction has been observed also in numerical simulation. Numerical simulation has been based on the viscoelastic model of polymer, so you don't simulate individual polymer, but you simulate a field of an elastic field, which you expect to reproduce the effect of polymer in your fluid. There is a famous paper by Shures Kumar collaborator in 1997. They were able to observe qualitatively and also some quantitative aspect of turbulent drag reduction, even if the parameters are not exactly the same of the experiment. Okay, the Reynolds number is at which you observe turbulent drag reduction in a simulation is lower than in experiment, and on the other hand, you need more elasticity in the polymer with respect to the experiments. But nevertheless, they are able to see.
This was a pipe, a channel?
This was for a channel flow, yeah. Then was repeated also for the pipe. Okay, so let me introduce what are the model. One possible model for simulating polymers in a fluid. So this is the simplest model that was already introduced by Victor yesterday, the Oldroyd B model, which is a linear model for the polymer. So there are a lot of assumptions deriving this model. The first assumption, you start from what is called the dumbbell model for a polymer. So the polymer is simply a spring that connects two massless beads. Okay? So what is the assumption? There is only one relaxation time at this point, instead of infinite or large number of relaxation time. Then you neglect only all polymer-polymer interaction. And also you assume that your polymer is always smaller than the smallest scale in your flow, so the Kolmogorov scale. So the polymer is described by a vector, R. And what is the equation for this vector? So the polymer is stretched by gradient, because they are very small scale. Then there is a thermal noise that give you, with the elastic spring, give you the entropy spring, give you the equilibrium distance, the equilibrium configuration of the polymer, which is R0. Okay? Then from a single polymer, you want to simulate an ensemble of polymer, a fluid, so you go to an Eulerian model, and you introduce a polymer conformation tensor, which is nothing but the dimensionless correlation of polymer, where the average is taken over the thermal noise. Okay? So from this equation, you write the equation for the correlation, and you get the Oldroyd model, which is this equation, which you have the transport by the fluid, the stretching terms, and the relaxation term to the equilibrium configuration, which now is 1. Okay? And then you need to model the feedback on the flow. How you model the feedback on the flow? The idea is that you have an extra stress tensor, which is an elastic stress, which is due to the fact that you have two beads which have some drag on the fluid, and so you have an additional stress tensor which is proportional to N, which is the concentration of polymer, and also to the polymer conformation tensor, sigma. Okay, so the equation for the fluid part will be the use of Navier-Stokes equation plus the mechanical forcing, if you have, and this extra term which is induced by polymers. Okay, and here you have a kinematic viscosity, the polymer relaxation time, and eta, which is phenomenologically is the zero shear contribution to the total viscosity and is proportional to the polymer concentration. So the model is very simple. And with this kind of model, or some modification of this model, like a FiniP, which you have nonlinear spring, this is the only difference, okay, you are able to reproduce some of the aspects that, for example, polymer direct reduction observed in the experiment. But you can also play you can use the model to do some numerical investigation of setup which you cannot realize in experiments. And so I think this can be very interesting. For example, a few years ago, in collaboration with Antonio Celani and Andrea Mazzino, we studied one problem. The problem was whether you can find some kind of drag reduction even in the absence of boundaries. Okay? So what you want is a flow which has no boundaries, but which has some kind of mean velocity, because you can define the drag coefficient on a mean velocity. So we decide to work with the Kolmogorov flow, which is a well-known flow, which is a fixed point, laminar fixed point in Navier-Stokes equation, which means that you force the Navier-Stokes in a periodic box, in a cubic periodic box, with a monochromatic shear, okay, a cosine, for example, shear, and this as a result you have a turbulent flow, but if you take the mean velocity, even the mean velocity is monochromatic, and then you can define the drag coefficient as the work done by the force divided by kinetic energy. Okay? And then you add the polymer, you can see if there is any effect of the polymer even in absence of boundaries, which is something you cannot do. Is it more difficult to do in experiments, maybe? And so these are the results I want to show you very briefly, then I will go to the more recent data. These are the friction, the drag coefficient as a function of the Reynolds number for a Newtonian case, which this is more or less constant. Okay, there is a small decrease still, but it's more or less it's constant. And then the other data correspond to different elasticity, which means different Weisenberg number of the polymer and different concentration. And also, what I plot here is the mean velocity profile for a given value of the forcing, so for a fixed F, which means a fixed Reynolds number. For the Newtonian case, you see this cosine profile, and then when you add a polymer, you see that the mean velocity is increased with the same
but
forcing.
But it's still cosine? You've checked?
It is still a cosine, yes. I don't know why, I mean, there is no reason in a turbulent case, but the average remains a cosine.
And the polymer stress, which is shape of it?
And the polymer stress, I don't remember if it is plotted here. Maybe it's this one I cannot see, so you cannot see. Is the sign. Yes. Yeah. Monochromatic too. The average, they are all monochromatic. And what I plot here is the Reynolds stress, which is, of course, is reduced in presence of polymer, as expected. Okay, so you have less Reynolds stress and more mean flow. Okay, you can also collapse. This is a scatter plot because there are different parameters, different concentration, different Weisenberg number. You can rescale everything with a very simple argument, which is based essentially on Lumley-Tang criterion. And the idea is that when you have an onset for the drag reduction, when you have a Weisenberg number 1, which means that the mean gradient of the order of the characteristic time of polymers, and this gives you a prediction that the critical Reynolds number is proportional to the Weisenberg number or elasticity, if you prefer, to the power minus 2/3, and you can collapse all the data that I showed before in this simple line. Okay, this is the first possibility. Another kind of setup you can investigate numerically is if there is any drag reduction even in absence of mean flow, not only boundaries, but even a mean flow. So you take a homogeneous isotropic turbulence, and then in this case you cannot define a drag coefficient because there is not a mean flow, so you have to think to drag reduction in some different way. And it was investigated by many people, and also we did some prison walk. And the idea, what is, well, just to show you some result, just to give an idea, because it will be useful for later result. So what happened? When you add the polymer to homogeneous isotropic turbulence, what happens is that there is a reduction of turbulence fluctuation on small scale, because the idea is that there is a certain scale, which is, if you want, it's the Langmuir scale in the turbulent cascade, on which the kinetic energy flux is removed and is converted to elastic energy, which is dissipated by polymer. So you expect to have a reduction of viscous dissipation when you add the polymer. This is a function of Weisenberg, which is the elasticity of the polymers. So this is the ratio between the viscous dissipation over the energy input, which is 1 because you are in stationary condition. Then when you add polymers, it goes below 1 because some of the energy doesn't go to the viscous scale, but is removed by the polymer at a larger scale.
Due to elastic waves, did you observe elastic waves?
In this setup, no, we didn't check, but we didn't check. And I want to mention that this plot is very similar to what observed in experiment, but this is in as a function of concentration and not as a function of Weisenberg number. No. But it's okay, the effect here is stronger than in our case, but also the Reynolds number. Okay, so we have seen that polymer has different effect on different turbulent flow, even in absence of mean flow. So the question I want to address today is if there is any effect of polymer on turbulent convection. So in particular, the idea is that because in turbulent convection, one of the key quantities is the heat transfer, how much the turbulent flow is able to transfer the heat, one can ask whether the polymer can have some effect on the heat transfer. Okay? And there are not many studies in this direction, apart from two very recent papers, which appeared last year. One, an experimental paper based on a really benign experiment by the group of Gunther, that gave a negative result. Negative in the sense that there is the heat transfer is reduced in presence of polymers. So it means not no. It means that even there is an effect which is negative. But there is also another paper based by Baines and collaborator, based on numerical simulation with a mean temperature gradient and a shell model, which they observe some positive result. So we decided to study this problem by using a very simple setup for turbulent convection, which is Rayleigh Taylor turbulence, which is very simple, much simpler than Rayleigh Benard, because we don't have any boundaries here. So all the phenomenology is much simpler. But nevertheless, it's something which you can realize if you want in a laboratory. Okay, so let me briefly recall what is Rayleigh Taylor turbulence. So the Rayleigh-Taylor instability, which was studied by Rayleigh more 130 years ago, is the instability at the interface between two fluids of different density, of if you want a different temperature, in a relative acceleration, for example, in a gravitational field. Okay, so if you have a cold water and the top of hot water, this configuration is unstable. So at the interface, you have an instability. And the instability develops in the turbulent flow that I will show you before later. So the temperature jump between the two fluids give you defined the Atwood number, which is the dimensionless difference of densities. And for small Atwood numbers, you may expect that you may assume that the Businex approximation holds, which is very convenient because in an approximation, you have a fluid which is incompressible. So the equation becomes the usual Businex equation. You have a Navier-Stokes equation with a buoyancy term, which couples with the temperature field which is transported by the flow, which is not passive, it's active because of this feedback. Okay? The important point is this is incompressible. And so the problem is a problem with the initial condition, which the velocity at the initial time is zero. Everything, you don't have turbulence, you don't have a flow in your fluid, and you have an initial jump, a stable jump of temperature, and you have a time-evolving turbulence. So just one slide on the phenomenology of Rayleigh-Taylor turbulence. So I show here a short movie. This is a vertical section of a numerical simulation of Rayleigh-Taylor without polymers now, just usual water. Rayleigh-Taylor, in which colors represent the temperature, so white is hot and black is cold. And you see the stability at the beginning, then the stability develops in plumes, the plumes are unstable, and they generate a turbulent flow that grows in time. And so you can understand the growth of this, what is called the mixing layer, okay, between the two layers of the mixed fluid, you can understand simply by starting from the energy balance, okay? Because in this system you have that potential energy, that the only thing you have at the beginning, is converted into kinetic energy by the energy balance. So you have the kinetic energy grows because there is a conversion from potential energy, but some potential energy goes to small scale to dissipate by viscosity, okay? So this is the energy balance from the Navier-Stokes equation. And then from a dimensional point of view, you have that energy is nothing but U square, and this term is U times the temperature jump, which is a constant. So immediately you get that large scale velocity fluctuation are grows in time like T, okay? Times the Atwood number and the gravity acceleration. And so it means that a scale, a typical scale, which is the mixing, the width of the mixing layer grows quadratically in time, which is nothing but constant acceleration motion. And then what is more important from our point of view is that this flow is turbulent, and you can estimate what is the kinetic energy pumped in the system, the rate of input of kinetic energy, as usual as the typical velocity fluctuation large scale to power 3 divided by scale, and this gives you something which goes in time. So it's a time evolving turbulence in which the flux, kinetic energy flux, grows linearly in time. It's not stationary turbulence. This made a difference with respect to usual turbulence. This slide will show you the evolution of the mixing layer. At a given time, you have this snapshot from this, or if you want from this, which is the mean temperature profile, which is average over horizontal layer, you can clearly define what is the width of the mixing layer. Okay, and so you can plot how the width of the mixing layer grows as a function of time, and you see quite clearly this is a parabolic shape. Then you compensate with T-square, and you can estimate what is this dimensionless coefficient in which people working in relatively low turbulence, they are very interested in this coefficient, which is a dimensionless number from this problem, which is something which is now the agreement is around the 0.03, 0.04. Okay? Most of the numerical simulation agree on with this number. Okay, then for what concerns small scale fluctuation in relatively Taylor turbulence, there was a recent theory proposed by Misha Chertoff in 2003, and I want to recall you here very briefly for you. The idea is quite simple at the end, but there are some assumptions which are not trivial. So now we have not usual Navier-Stokes, but we have a Navier-Stokes plus an additional term. So you have different term here, and you have to make some assumption which term is important. Okay. Of course, the buoyancy term is a fundamental term at large scale because it's what is pumping energy in the system. But then you can make an assumption that if you go to small scale fluctuation, as in turbulent cascade, you may assume that this term becomes negligible with respect to the other one. Okay, it's just an assumption. And then you see what happens. So if you assume that the typical temperature fluctuation at small scale, this term with this temperature fluctuation becomes much smaller than the inertial term in particular, so we expect that the temperature becomes passive at small scale, and so you recover the usual Kolmogorov-Obukhov scaling of usual turbulence which plus a temperature which is a passive scalar. Okay? The only difference with respect to usual turbulence is that you have a kinetic, you have a flow, a turbulent flux, which is not constant but grows in time, as we have seen before. And so you end with a prediction for the fluctuation of velocity and temperature, which is relatively simple. You have the spatial scaling, which is Kolmogorov scaling, one-third. You have a temporal scaling, which comes from this, the scaling of the energy flux. And then you have dimension coefficient. And okay, you have to check if this prediction is correct or not, but at least you can say that this prediction is consistent with the assumption that you made at the beginning, because now if you compute what is the ratio between this term and this term, okay, using this scaling, you get that this is essentially the ratio of number at a given scale, it goes to zero as the power of R to the power 2 term. So at least this is self-consistent, this argument, okay? I want to stress the fact that this is very simple, but it's not trivial. It's not trivial in the sense that, for example, in two dimensions, in which you expect to have an inverse cascade of energy, this argument doesn't work. Because if you have an inverse cascade, it means that your cascade goes to large scale. At the large scale, the buoyancy term is kind of dominating. So you can, it's not consistent in 2D, and indeed in 2D you have a different prediction which is based, which predicts the Bolzano scaling and not Kolmogorov scaling, which is a several. I think that Luca will speak about this later in the next days. So let me skip two-dimensional relicello in two dimension. Let me show some numerical result of the turbulent cascade in Rayleigh Taylor. So what I plot here is the energy flux in spectral space at a different time in the simulation. And there are two things which are important. The first one is you have a kind of, okay, not very large because the Reynolds number is not so large, but in any case, you can say that you have a plateau in space, in wave number, which means in space, in scales, which means you have a constant flux of energy in the range. You have an inertial range with a constant flux of energy. And the energy, the energy flux goes linearly in time, so at different time it goes up. And so you can think that Rayleigh-Taylor turbulence is nothing but an adiabatically evolving turbulence, and this is due to the fact that small scale, because of Kolmogorov scaling, you have the small scale, they evolve faster than large scale, so they have time to adapt to large scale variation, and you have a constant energy flux. You don't see any pile-up of energy at any scale. And then if you look at the energy spectra at different time, what I plot here is energy spectrum and temperature spectra for different time, and they are collapsed according to the prediction of the theory of Chertoff, and you see that the collapse is very good. Okay, you have almost perfect collapse, apart at large scale, but this is because at large scale the turbulence is evolving. So when you, the later time you have a larger scale, the flow.
What is in the insets?
The inset is the value of the kinetic energy flux and temperature fluctuation flux as a function of time with the prediction which is T for this one and 1 over T in the other case. Okay, so this is the prediction of, which correspond to these two scaling, temporal scaling, these two states. Okay, I want to make a remark on this point, which is more general than Rayleigh-Taylor, which probably is very trivial, but I didn't realize before studying this problem. So Rayleigh-Taylor is a time-evolving turbulence. It means that you can think in general to have a turbulence system which is forced by a force which change in time. So you have a time-dependent input, and you write the energy balance, so you don't expect to be stationary, so you have kinetic energy grows, it grows because of the input and decreases because of the viscous dissipation. Then, if you assume to have an adiabatic evolution of Kolmogorov spectrum, okay, like this, then of course this is compatible with this one because this is total energy is nothing but the integral of the spectra. It's compatible only if the integral scale evolves according to this very simple law. Okay, you cannot have a fixed scale if you want to have something which evolves in a similar way. And so, indeed, this is realized in Rayleigh-Taylor turbulence, because in Rayleigh-Taylor turbulence, we know that the energy grows linearly in time, and so this requires that the scale grows, the integral scale grows like a t square, which means that the integral scale must be proportional to the width of the mixing layer. And indeed, this is what observed in the simulation. What I plot here is the integral scale computed by the autocorrelation of the velocity. For horizontal and vertical velocity, they are a little bit different because vertical velocity are more intense. But in any case, in both cases, we see that they are proportional to the width of the mixing layer. So there is the linear relation between the two. Okay.
But they actually
diverge
much smaller.
So velocity correlation scale is blue.
No, both are velocity correlation scale for vertical velocity and for, sorry, it's a function of age, not of time. So part one with respect to the other.
Okay.
Because I show you that age grows quadratically in time already.
Okay.
So this is horizontal, and this is for vertical velocity component.
It's anisotropic.
Yeah, it's anisotropic. At large scale, it's anisotropic. If you look at small scale, it recover more or less anisotropic.
Yeah, but these are the fluctuating
velocities
at the
large scale. This is large scale.
Yeah. Its ratio to age grows. So at some point it would cross it. I mean, if I continue this in the future, I would see that.
No, I don't see the point.
It's not,
it's not L over H. It just.
No, L versus H.
Ah, so it's always below the diagonal. Yeah. Okay.
So you keep the real constant
all together.
Sorry?
If you take the U cubed and divide it by the L, you take the U cubed for the blue one and divide it by the L of the blue curve, is it constant?
I don't know. The U?
Yeah, it's no shear, right? It should be. If we find it should be constant, the flux should be constant.
No, flux is time dependent. U cubed over L is flux.
But flux is dependent, it's linear in time. U cubed over L is
time.
Is T. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is epsilon basically what it's scalar?
Yeah, should be. Yeah. Okay. So the last part for this introduction on relay tailor turbulence is how you measure the each transport in relay tailor. What is the mixing efficiency in relay tailor? So we use the usual parameter, dimensionless number, which are the Rayleigh number, the Nusselt and the Reynolds number. But of course, because we are time evolving turbulence, all these numbers depend on time. And so from the how they depend on time can give you, can suggest you what is the relative scaling between them. Of course, you can derive more rigorous way, but this is the simplest way you can see it. So what is changing in time in this term are the width of the mixing layer, which define the temperature, the temperature jump, the size of your box essentially, h, and the velocity fluctuation. So because this goes linear in time, this is quadratically, from this definition you immediately get that the relation between a Reynolds number, a Nusselt number as a function of Prandtl, which is a constant, and the Rayleigh number is the square root of Rayleigh number, which is what is known as the ultimate state of thermal convection, which was derived by Crashen in 62, assuming that the Rayleigh number is so high that the boundary layer effect in the Rayleigh.
There's no boundaries here.
There are no boundaries, so just is obvious, in some sense it's trivial, if you want, that we recover the ultimate state regime in this setup, okay? And so what I plot here is just a confirmation of this prediction. This is the Nusselt number, which is the open symbol, and the Reynolds number as a function of the Rayleigh number for different setup, different simulation in order to cover a large range of, relatively large range of Rayleigh number. And also we did some simulation, but the statistics here is very low, so you can see the data not very good, as a scaling of the Prandtl number also. Prandtl number in numerical simulation you cannot change too much because it's very inconvenient from numerical point of view. But in any case, we were able to change a factor 20 and the
what
scale.
Did you use?
Sorry?
What Prandtl numbers did you simulate?
It's from something like from 0 to 10, something like that. Yeah, no, not too big, not too small, because you have it's very. It's a factor of 20, if I remember. Okay, now let me go to the new part of this talk, which is the viscoelastic Rayleigh Taylor turbulence. So what we do now, we do direct numerical simulation with a model which is more complicated, because we again have the Business equation for the velocity, the temperature field, but now this model is coupled with the Doyle B model in order to mimic the effect of polymers. Okay, so it becomes quite complicated model, and when you mix two different models, you have to think if the assumption between the different assumptions for the two models are consistent. At least I would say that because what is lacking here is any direct effect of the temperature field on polymers, which in principle you can have, because the relaxation time of polymer depends on the temperature. But because we are working a small Atwood number, we expect to have a very, we assume to have a very small temperature fluctuation, and so we don't expect to have any direct coupling between T and sigma fields. Okay, so this is the model we use for different parameters. So what I will show you are the results for a Newtonian case, which is the same case as before, and then I have a result for three different values of the polymer relaxation time, which is not the Weisenberg number, because the Weisenberg number will change in time also, like the Reynolds number, but these are the number in dimensionless unit, okay, it's not second, of course. Okay, so first of all, let me explain you what you can expect for the coil stress transition in Rayleigh Taylor turbulence. So everything starts from zero velocity, so zero velocity at zero shear, so the polymer at the beginning at time zero, they are coiled, they are not stretched. Then the Rayleigh Taylor turbulence develops, and we know that the integral scale goes like T square, and also you can easily estimate that the Kolmogorov scale decreases in Rayleigh Taylor turbulence as the T to the minus 1/4. Or if you want, the Kolmogorov time scale decreases as the T to the minus 1/2. So it means that given the relaxation time of polymer, you have the Weisenberg number, your setup grows like the square root of T. So at a certain point, you have a transition, a coil stress transition, which can be estimated as the time at which you have a coil stress transition is some, you can estimate in this way. So it's proportional to the polymer relaxation time to the power minus 2.
Coil stress transition defined not by Weisenberg, by Weisenberg locally, defined by or by Lyapunov exponent
or by aromatic gradient. What you find here is
okay.
Here, how
sure.
It relates.
Sure. Okay, you have a coefficient here, but you know that the Lyapunov exponent is proportional to the Editon over Kolmogorov Editon over time.
1 over tau.
1 over tau, of course, with a factor of 10, if I remember correctly, but in any case, you have a factor. I expect. Okay. No, the point I want to make is very simple. I mean, if you want, you can see also in this picture. Okay, you can define the laminar scale at the scale at which the polymer relaxation time is of the order of the Editon over time, and you have that the laminar scale grows like this to 1/2, okay, and the Kolmogorov scale decreases. So at a certain point they cross, and when they cross, you can expect a cold stress transition. Okay.
The problem is that your particular regression is already doesn't include scales. That's a problem. Because it works exactly the same on large scale and small scales, and it's not clear how it's related really to the behavior of polymers. What you're telling is right. You can define Weissenberg to Kolmogorov scale. But
it has time scale.
It's time. It's not in scale. You can rephrase in scale, but the argument is in time. Yes, I agree with you. Yeah.
Polymer time. So far, you haven't done anything. So far, you just said you should expect something.
Yeah, but you see.
You do the simulations, and
yes.
That's the real question.
Okay, but before going to the simulation, I want to mention one thing that maybe is absolutely relevant for all of you. But it's interesting that if you do the same argument in two-dimensional related tubules, you never observe cold stress transition, because in two dimensions you have that the Kolmogorov scale grows in time and faster, and so you never match the two. Okay, just strange things. Okay, we did a simulation, and the only plot I want to show you about polymer statistics is this one. Okay, so this is the mean elongation of polymer as a function of time, and time is scaled with this transition time. Sorry, it's written tau here, but it's the same. And so you see that at the beginning the polymer are coiled, which means one in this unit that I plot here, one is here. And then you have a transition to something which the polymer start to elongate. And we observe an elongation which is, as a function of time, is more or less linear. And this can be explained within this model, of course, I'm not saying in general, but within this model can be simply explained from an energy balance argument, okay? Because you have a transfer between kinetic energy and elastic energy.
Elastic energy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Why you put RMS? What is the real length of the polymer to R0? How big is this? All changing in R.
No, one is R0. This is a scale with R0. So this is the square root of the trace of sigma. The trace of sigma is R square. You take the average. Okay. What is.
Because it's linear polymer, you increase, you stretch polymer so much, 100 times.
Okay, this is for the longest polymer relaxation time we have. We also simulation with smaller relaxation time, which is 2 and 1. In that case, we observe something which is stretched less. This is the more problem. Okay, I'm not saying that all these numbers are physical. I mean, I want just to make you some. But there is some effect that I want to show to you. This is the probability density function of polymer elongation. Of taken at four different times within this linear range. Okay, I don't remember exactly the time. One of them is the last time. And nevertheless, you see, first of all, there is, if you want, a kind of collapse. The collapse is not very good. We don't understand why. But the important point I want to show you, there is a sharp cutoff on the right tail, or the PDF. And this is due to the fact that there is a feedback or the feedback of the polymer on the fluid, and because the polymer are linear, they are not nonlinear, so there is nothing that is cutting the possibility to be stretched. But it's only the feedback on the flow that at the end you have a kind of stationary distribution of polymer elongation when rescaled with the appropriate unit. Okay, so this is a real viscoelastic effect, I think. Okay, so what now let me move to the temperature, to velocity field, and I want to show you a couple of pictures just to see what happened in the flow. So these are two snapshots again of the temperature fields. Okay, this is for the Newtonian case as before, and this is for the viscoelastic case, and they start from exactly the same initial condition. So this is taken at a short time when the polymer is still cold. So there is no effect on the flow, and you don't see any effect. They are absolutely identical apart few small errors. But then if you look at later time, you see big difference between the two. Okay, so and already from this qualitative picture, you can understand what is happening in the system. So there are two effects, I think, that are very important. The first one, which is not very evident here, but is more evident when you take the statistics, is that these thermal plumes with polymer are faster, are somehow faster than the case without polymer. Okay, so which means that you have an acceleration of the growth of the mixing layer. And the second point, which is very evident from the picture, that small-scale turbulence is reduced in presence of polymer, and this is well known. It's well known also from homogeneous isotropic turbulence. And so it means that thermal plumes are more coherent, and because they are more coherent, they are able to transport heat more efficiently. This is the simple idea we have in mind, okay? And I want to show you with some statistics now. And so they correspond to heat transfer enhancement. Okay, so first for the acceleration of the growth of the mixing layer, what I plot here again is the growth of the mixing layer as a function of time for a Newtonian run, which is the black line, and for the three other viscoelastic case with three different values of the polymer relaxation time, and you see there is indeed a speed up of the mixing layer. And I want to mention also the fact that we did it together with Arvo Zella a few months ago, also a linear stability analysis of relatively stability in presence of polymers, and also from the linear stability analysis you see there is an acceleration of the instability. Okay,
the growth rate of instability,
growth rate of instability is larger,
is the same.
But?
The threshold is the same.
You don't have threshold. Without, in the other case, you don't have threshold. It's larger.
It's larger. For the same method.
Still quadratic.
It's exponential. Linear stability analysis.
No, but in your result.
Ah, sorry. Coming back to the result. Yes, it's constant with quadratic. We didn't compensate very well here. You don't see very well here. But it's faster than linear in any case. Yes.
No, but I mean, still, I mean, the only change is in the prefactor, in the alpha prefactor.
Yeah, this is what we claim, yes. Okay, so you can give an interpretation to this fact in terms of a drag reduction. I try to convince you better, because, so what is the drag coefficient? There's the ratio between the work and the kinetic energy. So what is the work done by the system? Now is the change in potential energy. At the beginning, you have only potential energy, and then you have less potential energy. You can estimate the change in potential energy, assuming that there is a linear temperature profile, which is more or less correct. You estimate the drop in potential energy as the width of the mixing layer, okay, very simple argument. And then what is the kinetic energy, coherent kinetic energy, of course, only the coherent or large scale. Large scale plume is nothing but the velocity of the mixing layer square. Okay, this gives you a kind of mean velocity, how the mixing layer goes in time. And so between, if you take the ratio between these two, you define a drag coefficient, which is proportional to this expression. And this expression is nothing but the inverse of the alpha coefficient that you were asking about, which is the numerical prefactor in T square law. So the fact that you have a faster mixing layer, which means you have a larger value of alpha, it means that you have a drag coefficient which is smaller than the Newtonian case.
Why don't you define it, as you said before, for the Kolmogorov flow? I mean, that's the power injected by the buoyancy divided by the total kinetic energy is exactly the same?
By total kinetic energy, what do you mean? You need a mean kinetic energy, not the turbulence. No, that means, I don't know.
No.
It's to the mean kinetic energy or the mean flow. This is what you need.
What's the mean flow?
H dot is mean flow.
H dot. You can define another way. I agree with you, but I think it's a more reasonable way to define the mean flow here.
No, the problem that I have with this presentation is that, once more, what is the elastic stresses? Because part of the energy going to elastic stresses.
Yes.
That's probably what you have in this drag energy.
Yeah, I have some, I think I have some slide. Let me see, I don't remember exactly. So this is the spectrum for at a given time, or this is the last time we have a simulation, but just to show you that with respect to the Newtonian case, in presence of polymer, you have a depletion of small-scale motion, and you have an increase of large-scale kinetic energy, which is consistent with what we observed before. And so these are the different contributions. Maybe here you can see something. We don't have the stress, but we have the the elastic energy. So what I plot here is the different contribution to the energy balance. I plot potential energy, kinetic energy, elastic energy, and viscous dissipation as a function of time. For you don't see, I'm sorry, you see only the Newtonian case, which is the continuous line, and you can see that there are other lines which correspond to the different viscoelastic case. Of course, in this case, there is only the viscoelastic case. But what I want to, instead of showing this, I want to make this argument for the energy balance, which is not trivial at all. So the energy, you have a total energy which is given by the contribution by potential, kinetic, and elastic energy. Okay, these are the different terms. Then if you take time derivative, you have energy balance, which means that you have a potential energy, the derivative of potential energy is equal to the increment of kinetic energy, the increment of elastic energy, and then you have viscous dissipation and elastic dissipation. Also, polymer contribute with elastic dissipation. The important point is that the elastic dissipation within this model is proportional to the elongation of the polymer, so it's proportional to the elastic energy. Okay, so it means that at variance with the Newtonian case, you cannot take the same scaling, time scaling behavior for all these terms, because these are time derivatives, and these are not time derivatives, and they have the same quantity. Okay, so you have to make some assumption, which means that long time, there are two possibilities, and one possibility is that this term scale like the other term, and so it means that this term will dominate a long time, or otherwise this term like scale at the other term, and this term will be neglected at a late time. Which means, if it were the case, it means that the polymer effect will be negligible a long time, because the elastic energy will go to zero, the relative elastic energy. Indeed, what we observe is the previous picture is the sense that we see that both kinetic energy and elastic energy goes quadratically in time as a density. And so it means that because this going quadratically in time, this goes, all this time goes like linear in time, and this goes quadratically. So it means that the ratio between the elastic dissipation and the viscous dissipation grows in time. So it means that a long time, we expect that elastic dissipation dominates with respect to the Newtonian dissipation, which is consistent, if you want, with the idea that you have a cascade in which the polymer becomes more and more important at large scale. And this is what we observe indeed. This is the ratio between elastic dissipation and kinetic dissipation for two different elasticity for the polymers as a function of time, and you see more or less a linear trend in the late stage. Okay, so last part, I want to discuss the heat transfer for this model. So what I plot here is the Nusselt number as a function of time, okay, for the Newtonian case and for the three polymer case, and you see there is an increase of the Nusselt number at a given time, but also the Rayleigh number goes at a given time, because the Rayleigh number is proportional to the width of the mixing layer. But the fact is that you have the Nusselt increase more than the Rayleigh number. Indeed, if you plot Nusselt as a function of Rayleigh, okay, you see this is the Newtonian case, okay, which scale more or less like T to 1/2, ultimate state, Rayleigh to 1/2, and for with polymer, you have an increase of the Nusselt number at a given Rayleigh number. Okay, an increase is about what we observe if you estimate what is the parameter C, the dimensionless parameter number in front of the scaling, we observe an increase of about 50% with the more elastic polymers. The last plot, I want to discuss what are the origin, where is the origin of the enhancement of the heat transfer in this flow. So I want to rewrite the Nusselt number in this way. Okay, I rewrite as the correlation between vertical velocity and temperature, and then I have to multiply by the RMS of the vertical velocity, the temperature RMS, this is the width of the mixing layer, divided by the temperature jump and the diffusivity, as usual. So what I plot here are the time behavior of the different contribution in the Nusselt number. So this is already, we have seen, the polymer accelerated the width of the mixing layer, so this term increases in presence of polymer. Okay. Also, vertical velocity is increasing in presence of polymers, so also the WRMS increase presence of polymers. also temperature fluctuation because you have the plume are less mixed. And also what is important and not expected at the beginning is also that the correlation between vertical velocity and temperature increase in presence of polymer, which means you have a relative contribution to all this term to the global budget, which is an asset number. On which curve? On all this curve? Yeah. I have no idea. Sorry.
No, should I take that seriously, like the solid black curve and the dotted blue one for 0 and 1 respectively? They are first together, and then they come apart, and then they come together again? Is that, and that also showed up in Nussel versus Rayleigh?
Okay.
Is that real?
Okay, this is the result of a single run, okay? So we have fluctuation. You have fluctuation when you compute large-scale quantities, because this is an average of all your box. And so you have temporal fluctuation. I agree with you that the blue line, which corresponds to polymer elongation 1, for this case of, and for this line, you cannot say so much. But for the more elastic polymer, which is with elasticity equal to 2, I think that the results are real and should be confirmed by the case. We have also a case that I didn't plot here, which is with T equal 10, which is more elastic polymer, and the effect is even stronger in that case. Okay, I don't have in this plot, I have only in the global plot. But I think that the effect is real, I mean.
Do you see any effect on the mean profile? No.
No. Not evident. I mean, the mean profile remains more or less.
Flux exactly the same profile.
Oh, it's linear in the middle, and where? No, I don't see a big difference. I show you the mean profile before, but it was just for one run. You need to take average of a different runs in order to do statistics.
Don't these things develop a large scale flow?
No, you never observe a large scale flow. You mean a recirculating flow?
That in your earlier movie, where you it had the impression that which without polymer. That there was kind of a breakthrough in the middle, which you said was called something.
No. This would mean that your growth of the mixing layer changes, not this square anymore, it becomes something different. No, we never saw something different than that. No. But this is a transient turbulence. I mean, you stop the simulation before it touches the boundary, so yeah. There is no, it cannot organize in the large scale motion in this setup. Okay, what I want just to finish to comment is this plot. This is consistent with what we observe for the picture before, that the plume are more coherent. It means that there is a stronger correlation between vertical velocity and temperature field, and so this is able to transport it more efficiently. Okay, most of these results you can apply only Rayleigh Taylor turbulence. Of course, only Rayleigh Taylor, you can define a missing layer that grows in time, etc. But I think that some of the results, in particular this one, the correlation between vertical velocity and temperature, are not peculiar of Rayleigh Taylor turbulence. They are more general of any system which transports heat. And so I think it would be very interesting to see whether it is possible to observe in some experiments, maybe not in Rayleigh Taylor turbulence.
It's a problem of numbers.
I finish. So. Okay.
Numbers and turbulent convection are the following. If you have characteristics frequency or close to Kolmogorov scale, on the order of 0.1 hertz. It's 0.1 hertz and characteristic relaxation time for polymers in usual fluid like water, 10 milliseconds. If we never can get Weissenberg order of 1, therefore it's...
You mean in Rayleigh Benard experiment?
Yeah,
I know, and did...
You need other polymers.
And that's it, you know, therefore all these theories, it's interesting, okay, but in reality you cannot get...
For later now.
In Rayleigh Benard, probably I agree with you.
I agree with you. So that's one. Secondly, I think it would be interesting to see the signature of elastic waves in this case. And you can do that because you have power spectra in K, you can do power spectra in frequency, and you can get this for scales close to Kolmogorov, you should see something.
At very small scale, you mean? Because at large scale, you have a turbulent motion that will cover any kind of waves. Below the Kolmogorov scale, it will be possible, yes. Yeah. Okay.
What's your Kmax eta in these simulations?
Okay, change in time, of course.
Yes.
But at the end, it's around 1.
It's around 1. So you really don't get into the deep dissipation scales or something. Because, I mean, what I'm wondering is that, of course, it's slightly different. We did some decaying simulations, as you might be knowing, of polymers. But, of course, there is some pumping of energy over there. And so we observed stretching of polymers, but it was never too large. But I think the difference is that here you are buoyancy driven, and most probably that gives you this crossover problem. Whereas in force case,
but you were doing a simulation in decaying turbulence. So in your case is exactly the opposite of this one.
Yes,
I mean,
you
came at it at the beginning, which is maximum, and then decays.
It's
accelerating turbulence. It's accelerating turbulence. So at the beginning it's very well resolved because you want to have at the end something which is still resolved. Yeah.
Okay.
Any
more questions or remarks? No. Okay. Thank you.